I got to run, Dale.
Wait a minute. One more thing. Mr.
Quick,
Nixon.
Quick. You got 5 seconds.
If you are...
Mr. Nixon does have to pay taxes, yes.
You are unable to pay an income tax. Are you then telling me that you are not put in prison?
That's correct.
That's right.
I see.
Okay.
All right, thank you. And if you withhold part of your taxes because you don't care to have them go
to... Oh, no, wait a minute. That's different.
...people in a war.
Hey, no way. Do me a favor. Don't pay him this year and find out, and I'll send you cigarettes, okay? See you later. Bye-bye. We got to get out of here because the news is coming up, and we'll be back here on this Russ Coughlin Show with Linda Currie and Jerry King of Internal Revenue Service. So hang around, and we'll hear your tax problems.
People to People Radio 81, KGO, San Francisco.
The time now is 11 o'clock.
Harry Reasoner is on vacation. This is Howard K. Smith, ABC News, Washington, for American Information Radio. I'll have a comment on our new envoys to Peking, our ping pong players, in just a moment.
Extra care in engineering. The Chrysler Corporation. Where every 71 Dodge, Plymouth, and Chrysler built in North America is built with torsion bar suspension. And that means extra comfort, extra safety, and
extra care in engineering.
Where every 71 Dodge, Plymouth, and Chrysler built in North America is built with unibody construction. Extra quiet, all steel, all welded, all around extra strength. Its strength surrounds you.
Extra care
in manufacturing. Example, every new Imperial by Chrysler is individually road tested before it's shipped from the assembly plant to you. The 71 Dodge, Plymouth, and Chrysler products of
extra care in engineering. Chrysler Corporation cars.
See them at your Dodge and Chrysler Plymouth dealers.
Chrysler Corporation cares.
Where ping pong leads, can diplomatic relations be far behind? As the Red Chinese do nothing without orders from headquarters, their invitation to our table tennis team to visit them is calculated. Probably a response to the State Department's recent lifting of restrictions on Americans traveling to China if China will let them in. China is letting some in. In metaphor as well as in fact, the ball is now in our court. One hopes we will act promptly to escalate this progress towards relations. Opportunities for U.S. diplomacy in Asia are opening up. That is illustrated by Brezhnev's strong criticism at the Russian Communist Party's 24th Congress in Moscow last week of West Pakistan for mistreating East Pakistan. Russia clearly seeks to keep all of South Asia bordering China independent as a counterweight to Red China. Well, West Pakistan is drifting into China's orbit. West Pakistan's troops fly to distant East Pakistan, not the short route over India, but over Red China with Peking's permission. Russia worries that West Pakistan may go completely into China's orbit or start a guerrilla war in East Pakistan from which China can benefit. It is one more sign Russia and China are playing a vast, increasingly intense chess game over Asia. Increasingly, they see one another, not us, as the main opponent. From this, we could draw diplomatic advantage and security, but that calls for having relations with China, just as we do now with Russia. So let our ping-pong team go, but please don't let it win. We must waste no opening towards better things. This is Howard K. Smith, ABC News, Washington, for American Information Radio.
From the KGO News Bureau, the Bay Area Report. The judge hearing the Angela Davis case in Marin County Superior Court, Judge Alan Lindsay, has refused to disqualify himself. Los Angeles Congressman Thomas Rees is insisting that Lieutenant William Kelly should be severely punished. A bomb blast ripped through a seventh-floor restroom today at the Fresno County Courthouse, but there were no injuries. San Francisco Mayor Joseph Alioto reported substantial progress tonight in negotiations on the city's 16-day teacher strike. Alioto interrupted the meeting tonight to inform newsmen of what he calls substantial progress on major issues. Total agreement has not been reached, he said. However, the probability of a successful termination of the negotiations has been considerably enhanced. The Pete Giddings weather forecast for the San Francisco Bay Area, partly cloudy tonight, increasing cloudiness on Friday, then rain likely at times late Friday through Saturday. Cooler Saturday, with lows both nights in the 40s to low 50s. Highs Friday in the upper 50s to mid 60s. And Saturday in the mid to upper 50s. Southerly winds increasing to 15 to 30 miles per hour on Friday. Chance of rain 60% Friday and 70% on Friday night. Currently in Oakland, it's 54 degrees. San Jose reports 56. San Rafael, 52. On the peninsula, it's 52 degrees. And officially, San Francisco reports 52. That's news. I'm Tavell Scott, and this is KGO Radio 81, where Russ Coghlan talks about news next.
If you have a few free hours each week, join the housewives, teachers, firemen, college students, bus drivers, airline stewardesses, nurses, engineers, and others who volunteer their free time to drive Red Cross cars and station wagons. They may drive a child to a therapy treatment or deliver precious human eyes to a hospital for a critical operation to restore someone's eyesight. They might also take hospitalized servicemen recently returned from Vietnam on a tour. Right now, there are scores of exciting driving assignments that desperately need to be handled, and we need your help. Whatever the errand, hundreds of Bay Area residents rely on the Red Cross for free transportation service, and Red Cross is depending upon you as volunteer drivers to fulfill its mission. If you have a valid California driver's license and are between the ages of 18 and 65, you can help. Call your local Red Cross and let us put you in the driver's seat. But please do it today.
This is the Russ Coghlan Show, and it's IRS night, and we have Linda Currit, the lady with the steely eyes here, and Jerry King, the reformed FBI man, and they are answering your questions in the IRS tonight. That's kind of what we're doing here. Let's get with it right now and get the theme out of there, Chuck, and let's get down to finding out who goes to jail and who stays out. Line two, you're on the air.
Okay.
Go to jail.
Yeah, well, I was going to say you're going to put me back in the hospital unless you can answer some of my questions.
Okay, go ahead.
This is a tough one. Okay, from January 70 through June of 70, my gross wages were $5,500, okay?
Okay.
March 70 through June 70, I had an accident on the job, workman's compensation payments of $980, which I turned back to my employer. Now, am I able to subtract that $980 from the $5,500 gross as a salary adjustment?
Well, the $980 shouldn't be included in the $5,500. Have you asked your employer whether it is?
No, it is not.
It is not. Then no, you may not deduct it because it's not included in your taxable wages.
Mm-hmm.
You can only take deductions after something has been included.
Now, then how do I go about approaching a sick pay approach?
I was afraid you were going to ask that. We'd have to figure that out. The important things are you have to know what your weekly rate of pay is and then what your weekly rate of pay while you were sick was. Did you receive your regular pay when you were sick?
Yeah, I get my regular pay, and I get it on a monthly basis. Can you fellas break it down at the IRS?
Well, it's going to... Yeah, we can. It would take a little while to work it out over the radio, but
yeah.
The important thing is you have to have received less than 75% of your regular rate of pay. But before you figure out how much you received, you can take the amount that was workman's compensation out. So say you received $25 in workman's compensation each week.
Yeah.
And you handed that over to your boss and he paid you $100.
Mm-hmm.
Then you would consider that you only received $75.
In other words, you'd be on the 75 or less proration of the sick pay thing, rather?
Generally.
The 30-day waiting period?
Generally, when you've received workman's compensation, you are, but it depends on how high your salary is. Get down the figures, what your monthly rate of pay is, how much workman's compensation you received and on what basis, and call 556-1040. Give them the exact figures, and they will break it out for you.
They won't be mad about it.
Oh, no, that's their job. They love it.
Thank you very much.
You're worried about offending those people, then, aren't you?
I'm how it is.
Well, we're all peasants. The only guy in here around in the 90% bracket's Bob Brixner.
Well, good and, for him.
He holds 12 jobs. Okay, thank you for your call, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye. Then he really does. He does get credit for the $900. He just gets it on a different prorated basis per week, then, doesn't he?
Well, no, that's just tax-free income, the $980.
Okay. I'm just trying to keep up with you guys. It's just amazing. Now, what kind of, how long do you people have to go to learn all this? What kind of training do you get, Jerry?
Well, generally, the Internal Revenue Agent is a college graduate with a major in accounting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have our own schools. As a matter of fact, that's what I'm doing currently, is teaching Internal Revenue Agents tax law right at the moment. We send our people, when they come out of college, to roughly 14 weeks initially, which is very intensive income tax law training. Then after they've been out for roughly six months, then we bring them back in and they get another batch of training for another month or so, and a little more advanced work. Then after they've been out a little longer, we bring them back in and give them a little more advanced work.
That's fantastic, because I should point out you guys aren't even looking at notes. Linda rattled that whole thing off, and she didn't look at even a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. It really is. I'm sorry, and you teach in the school, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You don't look like an FBI man. You look like George Orwell. Line four, you're in the air.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. By coincidence, I was working on my tax tonight. A little late. I was wondering about my husband, who has to drive his automobile to the construction work because he has to carry his tools. Now, is there an allowance on this sort of transportation?
This is something that the Internal Revenue Service has gone around and around with. There have been many cases that have gone to court on it. It is the feeling of the Internal Revenue Service that generally all commute, that is transportation from home to work, is not deductible. It's a personal expense. How far away from home is the construction site?
Well, sometimes it can amount to about 50 or 60 miles.
Mm-hmm. And is there public transportation to these areas?
Well, partially, but not completely. So this would be a question, too. That's what I was confused about.
Well, generally, in a case like this where there is no public transportation, then he would have to drive to work whether or not he had to carry tools. So this would make it definitely a commute situation. Now, once he gets to the construction site, does he ever have to drive to a different site during the same day?
At times, yes.
In that case, he would definitely be able to take his expenses if he's going from one site to another during the day. He definitely can take them at 12 cents a mile in 1970. But if he's driving from home to work, it doesn't sound like they're deductible.
Oh, yes. I think that there was something about this that I was very confused about. I can see why the confusion.
Many people ask about it.
But once he gets to work, any driving he does from then becomes deductible.
That's right, except his drive home.
Okay.
All right, now the next question also has to do with transportation. If you have to drive a distance to a hospital or a doctor's clinic or something, is this transportation still allowable as it has been in the past?
Yes, it is. Your transportation to a doctor or for any medical services is deductible at 6 cents a mile rather than the 12 cents. And you just take it like a regular medical expense. Is that clear?
Very good.
Thank you for the call. Right, bye-bye. Okay, line 8, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Yeah. Listen, my husband's 73, and last year he dumped everything into my lap. All of our savings, and turned the house over to me. Why, I don't know, and I've never worked in my life. I don't know how to handle nothing. Now I don't know who files out the income tax.
Is your husband still alive?
My husband is alive, but he's not responsible.
I see. How much did you have any source of income besides?
No, we haven't anything except I have $100 a month coming in from the bank a month, and then I have $70 out of the rental cottage.
$70?
Yeah. And then Social Security, and he has a small pension.
Social Security. What does his pension come from?
His pension comes from the union.
From the union.
Yeah.
Have you filed, has he filed a tax return in prior years?
Huh?
Have you filed tax returns in prior years?
I've never filed any taxes.
You've never filed any.
Well, has he?
I don't know how. He always had done it.
He has done it. Do you have copies of your last year's returns that he filed?
Yes, I have copies of the last year, but you see, last year he worked some.
Yes.
Half of the year.
Well, probably what you need, what you should do is call 556-1040 tomorrow and have your old return from last year that he filed. Have that in front of you and tell the people there what was reported on that return, and then they'll ask you some questions about the 1970 year, and they can tell you whether you have to file or not.
Partially blind, I can't read.
Oh, you can't read. Well, give them a call and let them kind of ask questions. It might be that you don't even have to file a return. And if they can just take the time and they will take the time, but we hesitate to take that long here on the radio. But
I understand that.
Sure. Well, give them a call and let them ask you some more questions, and I think they can tell whether or not you have to file at all. If you do, why, they'll tell you what to do and give you some help on it.
Number.
Did you write down the number? It's 556.
556-1040.
1040.
Thank you.
All right.
I'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you
so much. All right. Bye-bye. We got some lines open in San Francisco. That's 478-3456. 478-3456. San Jose, line 5, you're in the air.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. One on commodities and the other on gambling activities. On the commodities, I know what you actually expect, but I was wondering, is it reasonable to think that when you have as many as 400 or 500 separate transactions, that you've got to list each one of these, you know, the purchase price and the sale price, which, you know, may buy and sell the same day? Do you actually expect us to list, you know, that many transactions on schedule? I know you can't fit it all on Schedule D. It would be a separate schedule, but is that really reasonable when there are other ways to arrive at the same answer?
Well, I don't know what other method you'd use. Generally, the answer is yes. Now, if you have some, are you a broker?
No, you don't. You know, when you deal in commodities, it's not like the stock market. Anybody can, I'm an individual.
Uh-huh.
Anybody can buy commodities.
Well, the thing is, the gain or loss is determined on each individual transaction.
Well, the end result could also be acquired by knowing, the broker maintains a cash account, and he submits a statement to you at the beginning of the year how much you have.
Yes.
And it's at the end of the year, which is the same as the beginning of the year the next year. And if you have less than you started, you have a loss there, and that loss would be the same thing if you took each one and itemized it. And, in other words, why wouldn't that be acceptable?
Assuming you took into account your beginning and ending balances.
It would equal.
And they were all short-term.
With a lot less. Yeah, always short-term.
Yeah. Well, but you see, you're making several assumptions in there. Now, I'm not saying you can't, you could put it down that way and report it that way, but I think you better have backup records behind that. So if somebody wants to know the detail, you could provide them the individual detail on each item.
Well, that's no problem. I just think I'm saving work.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to be a receipt of some kind when you sell a stock and buy it. Isn't there some kind of piece of paper?
The broker maintains all
the... Well, the broker would have the records. He could get the records. He's just thinking that if he deals in hundreds of transactions, it's just an awful big long list. Yeah. You'd have several pages of transactions.
I see.
And there is a simpler way that really can get you the same answer.
Mm-hmm. But you'd have to have that backup information if it was requested.
That can be secured.
Sure.
The question is, it doesn't actually affect me, but I know of someone. It is an interesting thing to discuss, I think, on gambling activities. I happen to know a guy that gambles regularly, and actually one of the few people that I know that makes money at it.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks, I know he can't, but he wonders why he can't deduct expenses. In other words, he's making money, making quite a bit of money gambling, but the law says he can't deduct any expenses. I